The scribes and the Pharisees are questioning Jesus. And they begin by saying, well, your disciples are breaking the tradition because they're not washing their hands before they eat. And Jesus turns back to them and says, no, in fact, you are the ones who are breaking the tradition. You're breaking the commandments of God ourselves with this, your own traditions. And he goes on there to talk about how they offer nothing more than lip service to him. Their heart is not with him, but they're just going through the motions and not being who they need to be. And then he goes and talks to his disciples about a parable. And he reminds them that it's not the outside that is what is important. It's what's inside that really matters and what makes us who we need to be. And from that point on, he kind of shook the dust off of his sandals and went. He left the area. And that's where we begin our study with, as Thomas just read there. In verse 22, we see that Jesus is introduced to this woman. Just a reminder there, verse 22, behold, a woman of Canaan came from that region, and cried out to him, saying, have mercy on me, O Lord, Son of David, my daughter is severely demon-possessed. This verse right here tells us a lot about this woman, even though it may not seem like it at first. Now, I would encourage you to go ahead and put a marker here, because we will be coming back and noticing it. But also, go ahead and open up to Mark chapter 7. And there's going to be some... I'm going to be reading both accounts there so we can find out a little bit more information as we go through here. But this woman being a woman from Canaan, as we've studied in the adult Bible class, we see God's attitude towards those people of Canaan. Don't have anything to do. Don't marry these Canaanite women. Don't do anything with them because of the kind of people they are. They're going to draw you away from me. These are not godly kind of people. And that's important for us to remember as we go through this study and remembering who Jesus is dealing with. There in Mark chapter 7, though, as we look at more details there in verse 24, it says, from there he arose and went to the region of Tyre and Sidon, and he entered a house and wanted no one to know it, but he could not be hidden. For a woman whose young daughter had an unclean spirit heard about him, and she came and fell at his feet. The woman was a Greek, a Syrophoenician by birth, and she kept asking him to cast the demon out of her daughter. And so we find out a little bit more about her. She is from the region of Tyre and Sidon. A little bit about that, you can read about it in Ezekiel 26 through 28, a little bit about God's judgment on the people there of Tyre and Sidon, especially in Tyre. But these people were very wealthy. They had lots of everything going for them, really. They had, everybody was trading with them. They were like the center. They're right there, a coastal city. And they were extremely wise. God even calls them that. You're smarter. There's nothing that you don't know, basically. Again, the wealth, the trade, everything was great for them. But it was so great that they had raised themselves up and started calling themselves gods. And so you have this woman who's coming from this region, as we read there. And that's who she is. She's a Greek. She's a Gentile, a non-Jew. And so her coming to Jesus says a lot about her. We'll talk more about that as we go through here. But this is kind of, you can establish what kind of background she is, what kind of person she is coming, or place she's coming from, the kind of person that she possibly is. She had nothing going for her as far as Jesus was concerned. He was not interested in it, or so we can read. The disciples sure weren't interested in it. But again, she's written here for a reason, and we can understand more about that as we go through here. But she comes to Jesus with a request. And the request that she has is, have mercy on me. But as you look forward, the request was not for her. The request was for her daughter. She wasn't the one who was sick, it was the daughter. But as parents, we can understand what she's saying there. Whenever we pray to God for our children, on behalf of our children, their pain is our pain. Their suffering is our suffering. Their relief and their comfort is our relief and our comfort. So her mercy was contingent upon the situation her daughter was in. If she was going to have mercy, it was only going to come because her daughter had that mercy as well. But we see that she is a desperate woman. She's doing whatever she could to try to seek that help for her daughter, to get the demon possessed out of her. She's going to him understanding that she needs something that society has not been able to offer her up to this point. Something that her dead religion was not able to take care of, and it was powerless to help her with. But also something that she as a parent was not able to fix this problem. You ever been in those situations as a parent where you want to do everything you can to help, but your hands are tied? You just can't do anything. There's not physically anything you can do to help your child. That's the situation that we find this woman in, or is, she's in. But she has come to the understanding that Jesus is the only place that she's going to find any hope. Any help is only going to come through Him. And you know, when you think about that, it's kind of a sad reality, but I think she has a better grasp on how much she needed Jesus, maybe more so than we do at times. Her choice was to turn to Him whenever she had a problem and not try to deal with it herself. I mean, she'd already tried to, I'm sure, but she recognized there was only one place that I could find the hope and the help that I needed, and that was in Christ. It didn't matter what obstacles she faced. She's going to face a whole bunch of them here in just a minute. People don't like her and so forth. That she's going to have to go against and overcome certain things. But her hope and her faith in Christ was greater. And that's what helped her to have the result that she's going to have here. Beginning in verse 23, we see the persistence that this woman had. She didn't just give up. She didn't get shut down once and then say, well, I guess that's all I can do. She continued to fight. Verse 23 says, but he answered her not a word. And his disciples came and urged him, saying, send her away, for she cries out after us. But he answered and said, I was not sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Then she came and worshipped him, saying, Lord, help me. But he answered and said, it is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the little dogs. And she said, yes, Lord, even the little dogs eat the crumbs which fall from their master's table. Now go over to Mark chapter 7, and let's see the parallel passage there. Beginning in verse 27, Jesus said to her, let the children be filled first. You know, and I kind of imagined that when he said, let them be filled first, her mind went, that means there must be a second. And you know, that could be foreshadowing of the Gentiles are going to have their chance after the Jews have theirs or whatever. I'm not sure what she was thinking, obviously, there. But he said, let the children be filled first, for it is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the little dogs. And she answered and said to him, yes, Lord, yet even the little dogs under the table eat from the children's crumbs. It's pretty fascinating to think about how she responded to that. You know, we have people today that they may spit in our face figuratively or literally, do all kinds of things to us and whatever. And our first response sometimes is to jump back and get upset about things like that. But she didn't do that. She said, yes, Lord, this is how I'm going to respond to you. She understood the position that she was in. She understood where she needed something. And her responding in the other way was not going to help that. But she had to overcome lots of obstacles just in order for her to get here in front of Jesus and to have this outcome. The first thing that she had to overcome is her race. Again, as we talked about there in Ezekiel 26, it's more chapter 28. 29 gets into some other things there. We're talking about Egypt and so forth. But there, again, it talks about the kind of people they were, the wealth and so forth, like I already mentioned there. That she's coming from, this kind of people. Being a Syrophoenician and a Gentile. All these kinds of things. She had to turn her back on those things. You know, forget about who you were and who you are and by all rights should be at this point. Your birth, your livelihood, the way that you grew up, all these things, you've got to turn your back on those just to lower yourself to be able to come to Jesus. So she had to overcome that. She had to overcome her religion. Now, there's three times in our passage here in Matthew 15, verse 22, 24, and 27, that you notice that she refers to Jesus, this Jew, as Lord. She had to overcome her own religion in order to do these things. Verse 22, have mercy on me, O Lord, Son of David. She knew exactly who he was. She was not some ignorant person just coming, I heard this famous guy's coming to town, so let me go and see what I can do. She knew who he was. She came with faith. And so that, I mean, it shows a lot when all these things she's going to overcome. She had no right to come and talk to this Jewish Messiah, being who she was. It made no sense for her to even do that. But this woman was desperate, and she believed the things that she had heard. Kind of makes me think about Rahab and some of the things that she did. She shouldn't have been one that was doing these things, and she shouldn't have believed these things, but she did. And her faith caused her to have a response in that. Verse 23, you can see Jesus' response to her whenever she did this. It says, "He answered her not a word." And so there's this nonverbal communication that's going on here. And so she's having to overcome this and understand, this is not who I should be, this is not what I should be doing, but this is what I need to be doing. You could say that maybe she came up on the wrong side of the tracks. I used to hear that when I was growing up. You're a different kind of people than I am. Why are you over here doing this with us? But again, she understood what was going on. I mean, she was basically slapping her religion and her race in the face just by coming here. Another thing that she had to overcome, though, was racism there. Notice verse 23, how the disciples responded to her. It said, "The disciples came and urged him, saying, 'Send her away, for she cries out after us.'" They didn't want anything to do with her. "She's annoying to us. Get her away from her. I don't want anything to do with this woman, this Gentile, this person who has no right to be here, reason to be here. Send her away. You're not one of our people." And so that's the way that they treated her. She could have responded very differently at that point, saying, "You know what? This is futile. I should just give up and not go." But the thing that I want us to think about that with us, maybe our words or our actions have kept somebody from coming to Christ, have turned them away so that they will not come to Christ as they ought to. Again, we may have nonverbal cues and communication that we show to other people that says, "Nope, you're not one of our people." And so we need to be careful to make sure that our words, our actions, our inferences are not something that turns other people away from coming to God. But she was able to overcome this negativity and this racism, if you will. She was able to overcome the rejection that she's getting, again, as we just talked about there with the disciples. Verse 26, we can see how Jesus rejected her as well. But he answered and said, "It is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the little dogs." Again, these are harsh words. He just called her names. He just lowered her and said, "You're not worth any of this." It could have, again, easily turned her away. It could have shaken her up. But again, her faith was one that was unwavering. She also had to overcome reality. There's a lot of realities that she had to face in coming to Christ. Again, one reality is that my daughter is demon-possessed. That's a hard one to swallow. Again, that's foreign to us right now. But that was a real deal for them. My daughter, who I love, is in this situation. My religion is not able to help her. My people are not able to help her. I'm not able to help her. Jesus doesn't even want me to be here. His disciples want to send me away. She has to overcome a lot of realities here. But again, it goes back to her faith. Her faith. She was determined that this is the one that's going to give me hope. And again, that's no different than it was for us. She had too much at stake to turn around and go back home, just as we have too much at stake to not turn to Christ and have the kind of faith that we need. We need that same determination today. But you think about, what is she asking for from Christ? Is she asking him to drop everything and give her everything that he had? What does she ask for? "Just give me the crumbs. I just need a little bit. I've got enough faith to say that a tiny bit of Jesus is everything that I need." How many times do we think we need a whole lot of Jesus? What we do. But a little bit of him is all we need. It's sufficient for what we need. Not some magic light show and fog and smoke and all the things that so many are looking for today. I need Jesus. That's all she wanted. Just a little bit of it. "I'll come to you with humility, but you are more than enough for what I need." And we see as we continue on there that her faith is something that came with rewards. It paid off for her to be as persistent as she was and to understand what Christ was. Matthew chapter 15, verse 28 says, "Then Jesus answered and said to her, 'O woman, great is your faith.'" How had Jesus responded to her before this? He wouldn't say a word to her. I don't need to give you any of these things. As we see so many characters in the Bible, they're tested to see how they're going to respond in these situations. And her faith was tested, and she came out victorious in that. Again, O woman, great is your faith. Let it be to you as you desire. And her daughter was healed from that very hour. Turn one more time back to Mark chapter 7. Beginning of verse 29 this time. Jesus said to her, "For this saying, go your way. The demon has gone out of your daughter. And when she had come to her house, she found the demon gone and her daughter lying on the bed." Jesus responded to her faith. It's very interesting the way that he did that. Sometimes he does it by saying things to us, sometimes without saying things to us. You understand what I'm trying to say by that, I hope. He tested her in verse 23 by not saying a word to her. By letting her, you know, that's one of those hard things you think about, or I think about Job. What was his desire in all of this? Please talk to me, God. Say something. Let me know that you're hearing me. Tell me what I need to do to make things right. He wanted to hear from God. Well, here, she didn't get anything out of Jesus there in verse 23. Sometimes we want to hear, we want to see immediate results, and we're not content enough to say, you know what, in His time, as we talked about in Bible class, He makes things happen the way He wants to, in the time frame that He wants to. We need to be content with that. Again, this woman didn't let that destroy her whenever He didn't turn to her and talk to her. And so, without saying anything, he tested her. Verse 26, we see that He did turn and talk to her. Even though it was those harsh words, there was a test there. How are you going to respond to this when it's something you don't want to hear? When it's something you don't like hearing? But verse 27, we see how she responded to that. She didn't fight back. What did she say to Him, verse 27, whenever He said that? She said, "Yes, Lord, yet even the little dogs eat the crumbs which fall from their master's table." Verse 28 also. Again, if she was going to be a dog, she was going to be Jesus' dog. And she was happy with that. Again, remember where she was. Like I described Tyre and Sidon. The wealthy, the most intelligent, the biggest trade place. Everything is going for you. I'm a god. But this woman, no, I'm a dog. And I'm happy to be it because I'm your dog. We need to have that attitude in our lives. I am a dog, but I'm God's dog. I will serve you. I will do what I need to do because that's where my faith is. That's where my hope is. We've got to be like this woman. You know, you think about Jesus pointed out your faith is great. He could have picked out many different character traits in this. Your persistence is awesome, woman. Boy, you've got a lot of hope. You're doing things. You're going out there. You are humble. You're strong. You're whatever. But He said your faith is what is strong. Because all of those things are enveloped inside of our faith. And as we think about ourselves, as we leave and we go about our lives, people are going to be able to see our faith. How? Because I say I'm faithful? No, they're going to see it because how persistent we are for teaching. We're going to show how much we love and our trust and our hope is in Christ. And they're going to be able to see all these different aspects here that she was able to show other people. Again, humility, patience, perseverance, all these things that we've talked about. That's how people can see our faith. You know, we should be going around saying, "I have faith, I have faith." That doesn't do any good. It's the way we live our lives. And this woman is showing what kind of faith we ought to have. Consider, again, why did I tell you about what was happening at the beginning of the chapter? Because this is what Jesus is going from. These Jews, these Jewish scribes, these Jewish Pharisees, these that should have been doing what they should have and should have the faith that they should have had, they didn't have it. He has to rebuke them. You show this outward stuff. You give me lip service, but your heart is not there. You don't have faith. And you think about what had happened right before that. Peter had gone out on the water and he didn't have the faith to come to Jesus. His own disciple did not have the faith that he ought to. But here is this Greek woman who should not have anything to do, shouldn't even be here, shouldn't be talking to him, should not be acknowledging another God, the Son of God. But she is the one that has faith. But when I look around today, how many times have you ever been shamed by those out in the world? Because they seem to have a greater faith than we do. They have a greater love, and they show it, than we do. Their benevolence, their hospitality, their this, that, and the other, their love, as we see the greatest two commandments, is greater than ours is. But we're the ones that are supposed to be the ones that are showing it the greatest. To show our faith and show our hope. But maybe we get shamed because we don't have it the way that we ought to. She had a great faith. And she was just a little woman. We need to learn lessons from people like that. Jesus rewarded her faith. Not only, he didn't just respond to it. Verse 28 says that your daughter was healed from that very hour. Again, sometimes we seem to maybe not think that God is strong enough for just to answer a prayer. Just a prayer. Well, my problems are too big for a prayer. Again, we want bigger things and want to understand things like that. But again, we need to have that faith of a dog. The faith of this little woman. We need to remember all these stories that we read about in the Bible. I made a list of several of them here. We need to remember how Jairus, remember when his daughter was dying? He turned it over to Christ. You know, I mentioned in class, people don't like grace sometimes, that word. Oh, I don't want to use that. Give it to God. Oh, that's another phrase that I don't like hearing because that means that I've got some kind of feeling or something there. That's exactly what these people did. Jairus turned it over to God. We're talking about Christ and God here, same thing. And what was able to happen? Her daughter was able to be made alive again. Mary and Martha turned it over to Jesus when Lazarus died. And Jesus was able to raise Lazarus. When the multitudes needed to be fed, they turned over the fish and the loaves. And Jesus was able to feed them and to have some left over. When the disciples were on the Sea of Galilee and the storm was coming, they turned it over to Jesus. And guess what? He was able to calm the sea, to get them back to shore. When the lepers needed help, he helped them. When those that were blind asked for it, he made them see. When those that were crippled, he made them to walk. All these different aspects. But we doubt that God has the power to do that for us. When we have our own problems and our own things that are bothering us, we can't do it. Jesus himself is an example. He's dead for 3 days when it seems like all hope is lost and all the people around him, who he's been telling them, this is what's happening, it's going to happen, I'm going to be risen from the dead, and they're doubting and not sure about what's going on there. When all hope is lost, Jesus can. He's able to come back to life, raised from the dead. How can we read these things and doubt that God is able? We get so caught up in all these problems and we think that there's no mercy to be had for us. But mercy was offered for this woman. And it can be offered for us as well. Again, this Canaanite woman only needed a few crumbs, as I mentioned. It may be that we feel like we need a whole loaf of bread. I know there's times like that in my life. I need more than just a little bit. I need the whole thing. But we don't need that. We need a little bit of Jesus and that'll be sufficient for us. You know, sometimes it's always Satan. That's the thing I don't think we point out enough. We've got problems, we've got concerns, we've got worries, somebody or something. It's all Satan. He's working on us, trying to weaken our faith. Just like this woman's faith was tested, but she didn't give in. And we can't give in either. Whatever worry or stress we're going through, the thing that we don't know what we're needing to do and we start to fall off, we need to turn to Jesus and look for some crumbs. In Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 15, we're reminded of how Jesus is there to sympathize with us and be there for us, understanding our struggles and our weaknesses. Verse 15, "For we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but was in all points tempted as we are, yet without sin. Let us therefore come boldly to the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need." This woman would have not gotten any help if she had not come to Jesus. And that's a good thing for us to remember. Again, regardless of what's going on there, regardless how many times we've sinned or how bad we think our sin was. Sin is sin. That doesn't change Jesus' desire for us. As we've read several times, the invitation that Jesus offers, Matthew 11, verse 28, "Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." You know, the thing about the Canaanite woman, she wasn't even invited, but she came. Why would we not come knowing that we have an invitation that Jesus has asked for us specifically? I was talking to Michelle the other day about, what do you think about during the Lord's Supper? And she said, one of the things that is, I don't know the emotion to even say about it, is sit there thinking about, you're standing there right before Christ, and He died for you. You know, don't say you put me there. Jesus died for me as I'm suffering, and even though I'm not in existence there, my sins are what He's sitting there dying for. Don't think about other people's sins, think about yours. That's what He did it for. But even in that, He invites us, because it doesn't change what He wants us to do. Come to me. That's the only place you're going to find mercy. It's the only place you're going to find forgiveness. It's the only place you're going to find comfort, is coming to Jesus. We need to keep that in mind. That invitation is always there. Again, if you have the faith this morning that Jesus is the Son of God, that He died on the cross for our sins, won't you show that in obedience as you come and are baptized for the forgiveness of those sins? Again, maybe you are a child of God, but you're down with all those things that we're talking about. Those worries, those stresses, those cares, struggling to find happiness in life. Whatever it is, we're only going to find it if we come to Jesus. It's there for us. The mercy is there. He can help you like nobody else can. You can look all over the place and you can find some form of happiness, but true happiness only comes through Christ. If you have any need this morning to make your life right, to become a child of God, or to seek encouragement through prayer, we will be more than happy to help you with that, but you have to come. Please do that right now as we stand and sing.
Someday you'll stand at the bar of mine. Someday your record you'll see. Someday you'll answer the question of life. What will your answer be? What will it be? What will it be? Oh, what will it be? What will your answer be? Now is the time to prepare, my friend. Make yourself spotless and free. Washed in the blood of the crucified one, He will your answer be. What will it be? What will it be? Where will you spend your eternity? What will it be?